The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Paddy!
Yes?
Oh, sod me! Do you know why? We thought we'd swap Steve out this week because we really enjoy the problems we have with Steve and getting him online. Steve wasn't available. Thought, let's get Paddy because he also has problems getting on the Skype call. So you know, I missed that problematic first 10 minutes where we have just calling non-stop and me shouting Paddy or Steve, Paddy, Steve, Paddy. Lovely. Anyway, welcome to the Weekend Podcast. Better start. Paddy wanted an early start, turned into a late start because we couldn't get him on. What was the problem, Pad? Me and Pete thought you're an Android fella, not an iPhone fella. We thought, you know, a bit of a liberal lefty. We didn't want to get into the Apple ecosystem, didn't want to get trapped into that system. But you've got an Apple phone, have you?
Yeah, I've got an Apple phone. Doesn't work.
Okay, you know, it makes it cheap, doesn't it, to pay the bills. But what are you using now? Are you on a phone or on a laptop?
I'm on my I don't know where to talk into my laptop. Where's the microphone?
It's round the back. Run the back, just lean over, crook your neck over, just talk over the back of it like that,
Holding it to the side of my head like a phone,
That's fine, it's like a laptop sandwich, a head sandwich in your laptop, that's it. Anyway, let's get on with the podcast. Tremendous. Do you know what, I've got to say, before I start,
I've got to go, I haven't got any time now.
All right, cheers, please. Cheers,
bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, bye-bye.
Bye.
Do you know, have you been watching some of the D-Day celebrations?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
I think phenomenal, isn't it? But I don't know if you saw that. I tweeted the other day about on GMTV or GMB, what it's called. They did an excellent piece. In fact, Kate Garraway went up in my estimation. She did a great piece from Normandy, D-Day veterans there, talking through their stories. And you think, these guys are phenomenal. You know, I don't see how they did what they did. And just the scariness. They travelled across, of course, the channel there, got out into freezing water. Some of them even drowned on the way over. I didn't know that. But they got into the water, their waist freezing cold, being shelled already, being shot down. Some of the people didn't make it to the beach even. And even if you did, where would you be going? You said, you know, you had a mission to do, but you imagine how scared you were. They just carried on. These are like 18 and 19-year-old boys, you know? And then they crossed to the studio, and then that guy, Richard, doing showbiz. They went to Love Island. I thought, is there a bigger contrast there between substance and superficiality? And it just underlines the banality and pointlessness of Love Island, you know? And I thought, in fact, you know what, though? We've got those guys in Normandy, the veterans, to thank for Love Island, because all those guys in that villa were about pulling a girl or their bodies and all that stuff. And I thought, do you know what? Going back 75 years, they'd have been worried about getting the beach alive, you know? And I thought, we've got them to thank that we can watch this banal trash on TV. But I thought, an amazing contrast between love and war, you know?
I'm not sure that's kind of the weirdest thing. Okay.
It is, yes. Even that Richard Arnold felt really poor. He felt like he was pointless. Yeah. Actually, covering Love Island after that amazing piece from D-Day. I often think blokes doing showbiz is a pointless job, isn't it? Really, you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel of jobs, just covering showbiz tittle tattle. You know,
that is an incredibly sexist comment, isn't it?
But blokes doing showbiz. Women to a certain extent. My missus likes to watch Love Island, and to be honest, all those magazines that come out they are the predominantly bought by women. Yes. You know, but a fella there enjoying talking about tittle tattle. I think, mate, come on, talk about stocks and shares or something. Do something with substance. You know.
Okay. But, going back to the D-Day landing. Yeah. I don't think we've got them to thank for Love Island.
We're thanking them
for a hell of a lot of an
I'm not thanking them for Love Island. What I'm saying is we are able to enjoy now a peaceful sort of environment because of those guys. And of course, we get that trash TV that we have to enjoy, fair enough. But you know what? There are worse things out there in life. And
we don't know where born, let's be honest.
Exactly. And I saw some of the stuff that goes on there. And in fact, I'm going to watch Saving Private Ryan. I've never seen that. Have you seen that?
Yes.
You've never seen that?
No, it's one of the films I've never seen. That and Schindler's List.
Oh, wow.
That and Schindler's List and Star Wars. No, I've seen Star Wars. But that and Schindler's List. But it's just one of the, Schindler's List is one of the things that's I think just too depressing to watch. People say it's amazing, but it's very depressing, you know? So it's almost, when you settle down for a film on a Saturday night, you sometimes, you know, want a bit of fun, don't you? A bit of cheeriness. You don't want to see people being killed by the millions. It's not.
Well, Save It Private Ryan won't be for a Saturday night then.
No, well, we're going to have to watch something. Anyway, by the way, guys, have you seen my YouTube channel? It's growing very nicely. Oh, yeah!
You've got a YouTube channel?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, do you know what you... It's very good. It's like radio, but with pictures and stuff. You know, it's amazing! Amazing! But
what, you've actually got a channel on there?
Yes, I've got a channel, yes. Absolutely,
so you have to pay for that.
Listen to me, Darren. Have you?
Tell some people about this.
Don't think. Listen, I will.
You should tell it on Twitter. You should mention it on Twitter.
Yeah. What I'm going to do, right? There's a few companies at the moment I'm quite excited about because they've gone really hot. They've cooked up really hot, but they're coming. They're rolling over a little bit and coming back in the buy zone. And I'm going to be showing the charts. But yes. Don't forget the bell. If you subscribe, hit the bell. Yeah, don't forget the bell. I didn't realize how important the bell was in the life of a YouTuber. But the bell is very important. So hit that bell. And I don't understand this. I've discovered, it took me an age. By the way, have you seen my community tab? I've got a lovely community tab. Have you seen that? Paddy's very impressed with my community tab, I think.
Yeah, we've heard about your community tab.
Yeah, well, on there, I'll be actually writing out. It's basically like, you know, a feed like Twitter on YouTube. Yeah. But I'll be writing out when I buy and sell stocks. All right? So last couple of days, I've been topping up in my dividend ETF. Because I think it's going to be paying a it's up to like 7% now, the yield on that. But it's bounced. The last couple of days, it's bounced. So it did hit the low.
And the ex-divvy date is next week, isn't it?
Ex-divvy date is next week. So you have to be, you know, owning shares in that. But they pay quarterly. So, of course, you don't get 7% in one chunk. It's spread across four quarters. It's in quarters. But it's not in equal quarters. So one quarter is bigger than the other. I don't understand that. So I've been rounding up on that. But check out don't forget the bell. Hit the community tab. And I'll put a little video up. But,
can I just clarify? Are you going to be putting stuff on the community tab that's different to what you're putting on Twitter?
Yes. I'm not going to put my buys and sells on Twitter. I'm going to put it on the community tab on YouTube. Yes, I am.
I might look at it then.
Because why I do that is if I explain, for example, I said I bought some more IUKD, which is dividend ETF, and I said, if you want to learn about it, here's the video, and you can link to the video quite nicely, you know, and it brings it up, and you can watch it in the thing, so it just works very well, and on YouTube as well, Twitter is also a bit bitter. You get a lot of people just faceless, made-up name people slagging you. I've never had anyone ever on Twitter, right, who said their face there and their name there, proper name, proper face, really just be nasty, you know.
I'll do that for you.
Yeah, no, generally, I'm not saying everyone without their name and face there is a troll, but it's more likely to be a troll if they don't have their name and their face there. If it's like some kind of cartoon, or this week I was getting slagged off by a lion and a kangaroo. A lion and a kangaroo were having a go at me.
I'm saying, I've got my face on there and real name, and I don't mind being nasty to you, so I'll do that.
That's fine, yeah. So if you're a lion and a kangaroo, you can have a little dig, but they weren't that nasty, actually. They were questioning Bidstack's tech, and a lot of people are questioning it. They're under-researched, pointing out to them why they are first-mover advantage in this field. And they were saying, well, programmatic ads have been around for a long time. I said, yes, they have. That's not what the first-mover advantage is here.
In my experience, lions and kangaroos don't know a lot about that stuff.
They don't know a lot about stocks and shit. I don't even know why they're on Twitter. I don't see how they can type their keypads. I find it hard on a mobile phone anyway to type type letters and stuff. But with the kangaroo, they got little claws, haven't they, kangaroos?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. Pad, are you aware of a kangaroo foot?
It's got four. That's different sizes.
Yeah, but the top small ones, like they're like dinosaurs, aren't they, really? I think they
use their feet to tweet.
That makes sense, feet to tweet.
They're like dinosaurs. They're not like dinosaurs.
Well, the Tyrannosaurus Rex, so big bottom legs, big back half, bottom half, aren't they? The top half is like a bit puny, but I suppose the kangaroos are still box very good with those things. They obviously
take your face off with their feet.
They also pack a punch, can't they?
Yeah.
But anyway, before we get into stocks and shares, by the way, I'm telling you why it's in first move advantage. Did you see Neil Woodford, star fund manager, eh? He's been doing dreadful for ages. I've been outperforming Neil for ages. It doesn't take a lot. He's been dreadful. And do you know what? He's been buying really illiquid. He gets in too early, Neil. I've seen that with Lawrence Stocks. His research is good because he pays people to do research, obviously. But he gets in very early on quite a few stocks, but he owns loads of them. But then he doesn't really care about the price. You know, they go down. I mean, a good example is Xeros. He got in Xeros very early when it's like £2.40 or something ridiculous. And he's still backing them at like 10 pence. And you think, Neil, call it quits, fella. When are you going to realise you're going to lose? How can you make your money back on that? I don't understand. If you're buying in big time at 240, he now owns like 40% pretty much, just under 40% of Xeros, right?
Yeah.
And he's got to get out of that. He said he's basically shutting down all illiquid, selling all illiquid unquoted stocks, anything below FTSE 350, and he's predominantly going into FTSE 100 stocks now. So there's going to be a lot of selling across the markets, I think, Neil Woodford. So that's why I put that on my community tab this week. I said I'm selling Xeros, and I put on my video as well saying I like the tech, I think it's amazing tech, but I'm selling. And do you know what the thing is though? What I noticed, and I did a while back a filter on my stock picking strategy, and one of them is board of members having skin in the game. And it means a lot. Do you know what? The trouble I've had recently, the most negative stocks or performing stocks I've had, have been stocks where the board don't. They fit four of the filters in my sort of quality filter, but not the fifth one, which is with board of directors having skin. And when you get overpaid managers rather than owners, you find that they're a bit more, laissez-faire, a bit more loose and easy with the money, you know? They don't really, like, they'll spend lots of money, the cash burn will go up, they're paid very well. And that's what's happened with Brave Bison, which is Woodford owns, Xeros. And so it's a real thing. A board of directors or the CEO of a big chunk in the game, it does align them with you. And so never discount that as a real reason, you know, not to invest or to invest, because it is. It's a major issue. They should have plenty of skin in the game. They should be like this. They should be an owner, not a manager. When you look at a company, think, okay, who's running this company? Is it a well-paid manager, or is it someone who's literally is an owner, like James from Bidstack, has 20% of the stock, you know? Or like Paul Griffiths from Predator Oil and Gas, has 50% of the stock, you know?
Yeah, but I was going to say there are a couple of resource stocks. I know the resource stocks where I'm in because of they've got board of directors have skin in the game and they have not performed well, and we've had a, you know, for different reasons. I'm thinking Cora, I'm thinking Jangada Mines, but...
Well, Cora, the CEO, doesn't have skin in the game, doesn't he? Tiny little bit, John thing. The board are quite well stacked. I mean, they are...
Yeah, the board, I'm not talking about... Yeah, I'm talking the board.
It's not a silver bullet. I mean, there's a cure-all thing here. What I'm saying is, in stocks and shares, this is what I say between difference in gambling and investing. Stocks and shares, hopefully, you can sway the chances of being successful. You can make it a probable success rather than a possible success by doing research. And those are one of the boxes you tick, you know? The board having.
It's not a foregone conclusion that just because they got skin in the game, it's going to be all okay, because other things obviously occur, such as Jangada Mine, such as with Jangada, that, you know, it has a negative impact on the share price, regardless of how much skin in the game they've got.
Yeah, but do you know what? I mean, like I said, if you look at my filter there, I'm strictly tech now. That's it from now on in, tech. That's what I mean. And I was criticised in September again, but do you know what? I think it was by a bird.
That can still happen in a tech company.
Oh, hang on. It was by a pigeon. A pigeon on Twitter was having a go at me.
Right.
I think it was, saying resource. So Justin's... He was doing conversations on Twitter with... Pretending I was taking part, she'd write out a bit of text on Twitter, like I was, involved there. So Justin, get out the bottom, the resource at the bottom cycle, and it wasn't the bottom cycle. I said, "You think this is the bottom cycle? You wait, we could have 2 years of this."
Yeah.
And so I got out my resource stocks, completely emptied out, pretty much all of them. And what's happened? They've grinded lower and lower, and they've underperformed. And talk about Jangada for a long time. Brazil is not a safe jurisdiction. It's not. I mean, it's one of the things that would come in the quality filter. They've had problems with the political chaos there. You know, the new guy, especially the new Trump, or the South American Trump, he's not. He's having problems. The economy has gone through the worst recession in about 100 years, they reckon. And it's still having really structural problems there. And a while back, I remember on a podcast, I said a lot of fund managers around the world were questioned over the jurisdictions. And they said Brazil was one of the... you know, most dangerous areas to invest at the moment. So it's not risk-free, Brazil, you know?
No, but with that, the only thing, because they've got skin in the game, the board, you kind of hope there is a plan there and there is going to be some sort of recovery. If they didn't have skin in the game, you'd kind of go, oh, well, that's toast now. But and maybe it is, but hopefully it's not. Hopefully we will see some master plan coming to fruition soon, and things will recover a bit. Yeah, but yeah. Who knows? So that gives you a little bit more confidence because they've got skin in the game.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, nothing's ever a be-all, end-all. You're the best companies in the world. Well, not the best companies, but you're companies who assume are quite safe for big caps will go through. Yeah. You know, they'll have problems.
But what you're just saying there about you being totally tech, but that doesn't mean those tech companies will still have these kind of same issues. They might have laser.
They will. What I've talked about before, though, is with the resource companies, oil and gas companies, the model they have pre-revenue means they are pre-revenue for a long time.
Yeah.
With tech companies that have revenue that's building up, they're heading towards that they have a timeline of profitability. You know, they're building value. And of course, resource, oil and gas are very cyclical. So when there's a downturn, they are highly leveraged to that downturn. And so you've got to get out. And that's what's been happening, you know, for a long time. I've been pumping out figures on Twitter for a long time about China's, you know, car industry going through the thing, you know, loans being going up and employment going down and all this stuff, and their GDP figures going down for a long time. And China consumes half the world's commodities. So when they take a hit, sentiment goes nuts. It goes, you know, it's really flat, and so you got to get out. And so it's cyclical, of course. I mean, resource companies will come back and start flying, but they've got to get to the bottom. Where is the bottom here? I don't know where it is. We could have another year, 2 years of China slowing down.
They've got to get to the bottom, and they've got to weather the bottom, haven't they? Weather the storm of the bottom.
Exactly. When they've got no revenue
coming in, and survive and then recover. So
And when they've got no signs of revenue yet coming in for a long time, it's like they've got to raise money. So how do they raise money? At a big discount, otherwise no one will raise money for them. There's this fallacy that, I mean, amongst private investors, that companies name the price at which they raise money. They don't. They have no say in it. They're lucky to get a fundraiser away. They are. If you are a resource company with your asset in an African country somewhere, right, you're exploring, why should anyone loan you money? It's the highest risk of all. It's a penny stock. It's like you're lucky to get any money at all. So they can't name their price. That's why it's a huge discount to give people a chance to get a 10% profit by flipping the stock. You know, that's why you just go for quality companies that have got revenue and hopefully will be, you know, cash generative in the next 12 months. That's what you should be aiming for. Longer than that, you find hard work. By the way, Ari and Larry, they got embroiled, didn't they? Embroiled in Neil Woodford. Ari, Larry and Neil. I wonder what's going on there, because Harry and Larry, you know, were Harry Lansdowne, Larry.
They're big fans. They're big fans of Neil.
Harry Hargreaves, Larry Lansdowne. Neil came along and said, listen, I'm starting my own fund. And he said, oh, let's go for a drink and a pasty then. Let's have a chat about this. And
come on, Neil, come down. Come down to Bristol.
Talk to us all about it. He said, you know, I'm staff and manager, right? I'm staff and manager. They won't call me a staffer. Yeah. I've left the city now, left the big boys, and got on my own. Right? We didn't know this, Neil. Yeah. Oh, we're raising billions. You raised, really? Bloody hell. And so he said, you want to come with us? Well, we can advertise that. We can get people on board because, you know, we'll just say staff and manager. That's all we need to say. We'll send out an email. We got staff and manager coming on board, and people will be chucking money at the left, right, and centre. And do you want to know what I'm investing? Do we don't care what you're investing in, Neil, because you're a staff and manager, isn't you? And so they're getting criticism now for Do you know what I found funny? Someone on Twitter said, I feel sorry for people who invest in these funds like that. And someone said on Twitter, Twitter's a nasty person. I think, do you know what? Having said that, I think this person was a cat. Who said this? said, I've got no sympathy for those people whatsoever. The investors should have done their own research. I mean, no, hang on. Not everyone's
that's
an investor. Yeah, that's nasty. Yeah. It's cats are nasty, isn't it?
Spiteful.
And I thought, not everyone's like that. I mean, investing's a hard game. You want to sometimes be able to leave your money with someone who you trust, who you believe is a bit of an expert, who has a bit of experience and has a good track record, which Neil Woodford did, you know. But apparently he's veered away from that, you know, that model he had when he was with the big guys. And but he's gone a bit
crazy. Equally, I thought it kind of shows that nothing is completely safe. So you kind of like, I know we dabble in all these silly kind of exciting micro stocks, but you kind of go, and people from the outside, I know people that go, well, I don't know why you're doing that, that's really risky. You kind of go, well, yes and no, you need to know what you're doing, and yes, it is risky, but equally, you could invest in Woodford, and that's risky, so,
Do you know what, it is. I mean, a lot of people often say, I invest in small cap stocks. Why? Because there's a potential to return multiples of what you initially put down, and you don't need a huge amount to make a decent amount of money. But they're very risky. And so what you need to do is have some quality filters in place that will help you spot potential pitfalls, you know, potential companies that will go through or will have a problem. And it takes a while. I hit a milestone in my portfolio of value this week, right? And
$10 million.
Yeah, a bit more than that. And I look back and I realise it's only pretty much, I've been investing since dot-com boom. I made money, then lost more money than I made, and then I was dabbled for a long time. Then the stock market crash or the financial crash, I got into Lloyds, went big in that, did quite well. And since the last 10 years, I've pretty much made sort of money almost every year, pretty much, I think, for like 10 years. But it's only in the last 5 years I started dabbling in small caps. And it's only in the last, I'd say, honestly, 6 months, I've really honed the strategy to something I'm really comfortable with. So that's how hard it is. I mean, it is a proper trade, you know? It's something you have to learn as you go along. And unfortunately, you have to lose money to learn it. But, yeah. You know, and I think that's the most effective way of learning. So you can tell people all the time, say, I wouldn't go put too much money in that. You give them guides. That's why I've done, you know, my 10 lessons I've learned from small caps. And I put that on my YouTube channel. Don't forget the bell.
Is there a video of that?
Yeah, it's a video. It's a series of 10. Yeah. Just look through those. Right. They're all linked. Yeah, so it's quite clever because they're linked, you see. So what's the first one? And the second one will come up. But those are lessons I've learned, you know. But people, it will have to. You can't tell people. You have to learn yourself. And I think the thing about so effective about stock shares, you get in it to try and earn money. If you get it wrong, it hits you right in the pocket where it hurts. Where you, exactly the opposite thing of what you wanted to happen, you know? So it is a learning curve.
I'm only 10% down now, so that's nice.
Yeah. That's good, isn't it? But the thing is, is there anything you've learned, Pat, from all this? What have you learned? What have you learned?
Should have left the money in the bank account.
Yeah. No, but you know what? Because once you learn this about investing, it's a skill that'll be with you for life. Look at Buffett. He's 86, I think, still investing. You know, so you know this is not like if you know being a professional football player at 30, you're pretty much knackered. You know, you can crack on for the rest of your life.
Yeah, but say, look at Buffett. Say, like, look at Ronaldo. We could be
I'm trying to say, as long as your mental marbles are all there, are all in the packet, they're all intact.
Yeah.
You will get better and better, and as you get older, hopefully you'll take less silly risks, and you'll weigh up stocks, take more time. Like now, I've got people with me now jumping into stocks, and you know, contact me on the community tab, and amongst other things,
the community tab in. Yeah.
It's all happening on the community tab. If you're lucky, boys, you could be a sort of guardian of the community. What do they call them? Sort of individuator. No, what do you call it? Well, you get someone in to oversee the content.
Regulator?
A regulator, yeah. I'm a regulator, guys. You have to wear a uniform, of course.
I'm the community tab regulator.
Yeah.
That's going straight on my CV.
You have to wear a uniform. You know.
Me and Paddy at the door of the community tab.
Yeah. But people just jump in.
Sorry, Paddy, how many stocks do you own?
Yeah.
And I was just out of interest, like, being 10% down overall, how much has Bidstack been a big part of that in terms of, is that the only stock that's up for?
Yeah, pretty much.
And how many stocks have you got?
That and Predator. So I think if there's one thing I've learned recently, it's that it's probably better to have more money in fewer stocks than having lots and lots.
Do you know what? That's true, and that's exactly what Buffett says. He says, essentially, well, people talk about diversification, right? And I'm not talking about putting all your all your eggs in one basket. I'm saying you're better. And I've got the same now. I'm down to about how many stocks have I got? 7. But you're better knowing fewer stocks very well than actually just trying to diversify. He says you can diversify and do ignorance. So basically, you can have 100 stocks. And luckily, and if one takes a hit, fine. Nothing happens. But you won't outperform the market either. You'll just be the market. You know, you just trundle along, going up and down. And so if you really want to outperform the market, then you have to really do the research, you know, and stick with stocks. Like at the moment now, I've got a handful of stocks I really like. I'm sticking with. I'll tell you what they are now. And I've covered them in videos. And I know the sort of owners of the companies, the board of directors. They've got skin in the game. And they are proper businesses that are developing. And some of them have run hot recently. They're coming back now. And that's when you top up, you know? So you buy some more because I'm trusting the company. I'm trusting what they're doing. And I trust that they are developing and progressing the story. And so that's what I'm doing. And at the moment, they're too hot. They need to come back a bit in the charts. But a few of them got momentum already. They've got trust. They've got interest there. They've got a bit of hype, hope, potential. So, and there are things like things like, you know, in fact, I'm not going to talk about bid stack anymore because I'm pretty much fully loaded there, bid stack. But I'm talking about things like, you know, Integumin, Neuformix, maybe Emotion Group, Way Education, Big Dish as well. Those kind of companies that, you know, the owners have chunks of skin in the game. I talk with them on a regular basis pretty much, and I like what they're doing, and I can see the model. So, yeah, you're right. You know, you can diversify yourself to ignorance, and that's it. But it's, you have to know. And do you know what? What I like about it, I've always said now, recently, you have to hone. There's too many opportunities out there. Many of them are not very good. So you really have to get down to the point where you've got to, you know, you are happy. Be really strict on what you own. Be really strict on what you own.
But what I was going to say with Paddy is that equally then it's about spreading risk, isn't it? And ultimately, well, the way I'm looking at it nowadays is more I'm looking at my portfolio value as a whole rather than all the individual parts. So I'm kind of going, because it's the good ones that then more than make up for the bad ones. So
if I was you, honestly, you're holding on to stuff now they're losing and they're going to be losing for a while.
Yeah.
I just consolidate that loss and put it into something that's going to make money, you know?
I'm thinking about that. I'm thinking about that a lot, but I'm not sure whether to do that or not.
It's like those adverts. We can consolidate your debt and put in one big pile of debt and we can charge you more or whatever. Just make it simpler. Less payments, but more interest. What does it say? Yeah, but you know what? If you want to diversify, like I said, I've got, I'd say, 20% of my portfolios in a fund, pretty much. And so that's across... in a FTSE 350. I've also got two other funds, not as big yet, but Vanguard, which is a tracker fund, and that's spread against, that's got about 1,000 stocks in that. Because
what are you tracking? Which one? Are you tracking the FTSE or tracking the
The dividend one, I've got a little bit in the NASDAQ, not yet, because it's run quite hot. Can't wait for that dip.
That's what I was looking at.
I've also got one in the Vanguard Lifestyle. Is it 100% one where it's 100% equity, but... let me just look at it. It's called Vanguard. They got Vanguard Lifestyle.
Vanguard.
Is that Vanguard? Yeah. What is it? Vanguard.
I had the... while back, I had the...
Life Strategy Funds. And this is... Life Strategy Funds, you can do 20% equity funds. So that's low risk. It's 80% bonds. Ridiculous. No point getting involved in that. You get 40%, 60%, 80%, 100%. And literally... that there holds most of the other funds, and so you spread across about 1,000 stocks in that. But it's you know, since I bought a few months back, it's about 5-6%, so it's half decent, you know. It's not going to blow the roof off, but you know, if you have a decent chunk of your portfolio in these funds, and that's long term, that's for your long term safety, you know. And then maybe another half. So Steve needs to put most of his portfolio, I'd say 60%, pretty much 70%. In these funds, and then the other 30-40%, he tries to get the old bid stacks, trying to find companies like that, you know, that has potential, and then he can outperform the market. Plus, he'll have a large section of his portfolio that's always a constant, you know, returning some incomes that way, or it stabilizes, you know. Paddy, do you own any funds?
No, I would love to get involved in that, but I'm not going to put any more money into my portfolio. Yeah. I haven't got the cash at the moment. So I need the stocks that I've got to start to pay me back in some way. So breaking even would be a nice point to hit if I can. I'd be really happy if that wasn't all just coming from Bidstack, though.
Yeah, but do you know what, Pat? Listen, this is going to be a lot of opportunities come up now. And listen, like I said, do you know what? It's nuts, but I've done well the last 10 years. But only in the last 6 months, pretty much, I'm still honing. In the last 6 months, I've really honed it. And I now feel sort of confident in what I'm picking. And I've realised I've seen the light of day. It's only because it took me a while to learn that. And I'm obviously 24/7 obsessed with stocks and shares, you know? So it is a hard thing to understand. And I'll see people recommending stocks now on Twitter, and I think, no, wouldn't touch it. And I'll tell why. I said, it doesn't fit my thing. So it's almost like, in any line of, I mean, Pat, at the moment, right, you are building a house. I would be as cheeky to say, I don't believe you're a specialist in that, are you?
I think I'm as specialist as most builders.
That's it. It's like most fund managers. You know what? Managers are not that good. They are picking the market. Most fund managers, believe it or not, buy funds. So they buy Vanguard, or you can buy, and they buy sort of the ETF that I just mentioned as well, the dividend one, right? And they'll charge you for that. And you can buy that anyway. So they're not even doing what they should be doing. You know, they're not stock picking. They'll pick the odds of FTSE dividend pay and all that stuff and do because they have to try and just stay with the market. They don't take many risks. They can't afford to. So it's like most builders, you know, are average. Of course they are. You get the ones that are good, you have to pay for. But like I said, how much practice have you done at building, though? Because I've seen your picture of your house there, and you're knocking ceilings through, there's supports here and all that stuff. How do you know what the heck you're doing?
I don't really, but I'm just seeing how it goes.
That can't be true.
Yeah, see, if I employed a fund manager, he said that to me. I
would, exactly.
So if I said to him, so how do you know what you're investing in and stuff like that? How do you know? I don't really, mate. You know, I just see how it goes. I think, right, you know what? I can pretty much do that.
I had a bricklayer in this week, and he put up some piers for me, and they were really bad. So I took them down the next day and did it myself. And I sort of, the whole way through this process, I've sort of learned that actually things that are really difficult or might appear to be difficult really aren't. And actually the only thing that would be really helpful is having a few more like people on site just to help get things in place quicker. Yeah. But most things are really simple.
Have building control been round yet?
Yeah.
Well, have they seen your handiwork and they're happy with
it? Very happy with it, yeah. Complimenting me on my work.
Okay. And so you're getting steels in and all that and on those piers?
Yeah, yeah.
How are you going to do that by yourself?
You can get these little lifts.
Jennies, aren't they? Little jennies,
and pops it up.
Yeah.
The one thing
is that by yourself. That's impressive. Okay.
Yeah, it is impressive. One thing they weren't happy with is Mr. Pad, this terrace house there. Last year it was one story building. You can't just chuck on 19 floors. You can't have a penthouse on the top 19th floor here. This is ridiculous. Yeah. Imagine that, a terrace house, a row of terrace houses. Paddy's house got 19 floors up. do any plan of that? Yes, you do. But Pat, how long is this going to take you?
I really want to get it done this month if I can. I want to get the structural stuff done, and then all the rest of it can happen as and when.
I'm trying to form an analogy here between building and investing. The thing is, how do you know what you're doing? You've learned as you've gone along, basically. You've made mistakes, have you, or what?
Yeah, well, I haven't made many mistakes. But
you chopped your hand off, didn't you?
No.
You did. You had a big accident on your hand. You had a big cut, and you had to go to the hospital.
Oh, that was last year. That was a long time ago.
And turns out, I've still got my hand.
Yeah, I've just got a nice scar now. That's cool.
You lost a hand, but you're sort of cracking on anyway.
It doesn't matter.
See, I'm a bit slower these days. I've got just one hand. But that's a lesson learned. You know, I won't lose the other one because I know what I did wrong last time. But, it's good. But do you know what? Pat, listen. What I'd say is check out the community tab.
Building advice.
Buddy, that is what you want to do. Are you filming this? Don't put it on Instagram, put it on YouTube. This is what I've done. I'm learning as I'm going, film little bits of it, get the community tab there to answer questions or comments underneath. And honestly, you could start doing some revenue out of that as well. You know? So I'm building my house. How much? The thing is, can't you just crowdfund some money and say, I need some money to film, finish my house off? Can you do that?
Well, no, I could just pay builders to do it, but I wanted to do it myself.
Yeah, well, I don't understand. Are you enjoying it then?
I'm sort of enjoying it, yeah. This week hasn't been a very good week. I haven't been very productive, and it's been really, really dusty. So much stuff is coming out the walls that my house is just covered in like an inch of dust.
Oh, I'd hate that.
It's horrible, yeah. So I'm really looking forward to this week being out of the way, and then next week should be a bit more productive.
Okay. I just want to mention bids a second, because lots of things going on there. So
because you haven't, basically, yeah.
Because I haven't, and I got a big chunk of it in my portfolio. And, so it's come back a little bit on Friday, right? But people are trading. When I first started off, I did trade. I realised I was trading because I didn't understand. I didn't research enough. I didn't have confidence in stocks, but, you know, they were held to hold them. And I thought, if I see about 100 quid profit, I just take the 100 quid profit and sell. And then realise it would just rise again. The share price I'd been selling, I sort of missed out on that. But it's come back at 5% on Friday. And I think, do you know what? That is phenomenal. That's all it's come back by. It's genuinely, the momentum of this stock is phenomenal because it's done 75% in 2 weeks. It's done 95% in 4 weeks. That's the rise Bidstack has had. And I mentioned, didn't I? I said, after the, I did a video on this on YouTube, and I said after the fundraise, once that uncertainty's gone about the price, it will rise, it'll go nuts. And it has, you know, and this is just a little breather. The news hasn't started yet. We had that announcement, of course, that two of the games they're in is going to be featured on Google Stadia, their new platform, streaming platform, which is very good because the install base for stream games, once they start getting going, will be a lot bigger, apparently, because there's not that payment of barrier entry to get a console, to buy the DVD. And in certain parts of the world, apparently, that isn't the thing. You could get India and all that stuff. That's not going to happen. So it'll go well. But that isn't really news about Google, about Bidstack, you know? And they're going to E3 this week, which is a big game publishers and developers conference. They've taken all the team with them, pretty much. Last time they went to GDC, the game developers conference, it was just James, CEO, and Fran, the CTO. They came back with a load of more signings, a bit of news. But I think now we're starting to see, they finished the signings, because James said pretty much that the advisory board is done. And I think we're going to start to see now proper news, operational news from Bidstack in the next few months. You know, so news hasn't started. Look at the movement. So you wait until pop news starts, you know?
I agree, but then at the same time, it's had such a meteoric rise, the valuation now is kind of bonkers at this stage.
But do you know what? It's like, so I saw someone say something, didn't finish the analogy off on Twitter, but someone said, it's like taking the picture of a train. And it didn't really finish the sentence off, right? And that's what they meant. And it's like people are looking at the financial statement of Bidstack when they first, you know, after 3-4 months, when they look, the end of year for 2018, they've only been listed 4 months. So it's like take the photograph of a train and saying that train is stopped when it's traveling 100 miles an hour, you know? So the progress they're making is, they're in a space, like James said, he pointed out, he's a good talker. Some people may say he's hyped it up a bit much. I don't think he has. He said, we are creating a new ad category that's hugely lucrative. They said there'll be businesses that exist in about 3, 4, 5 years' time because of us. I mean, you know, we are, this is why it's taking a long time. How do you report on a moving native in-game ad? Because as yet, there's no way of reporting accurately impressions. They are doing that with the Interactive Advertising Bureau. They've come up with a tech called Tracking Pixels. They're doing that, and once that's done, and the Interactive Advertising Bureau agree to that it's standardized, it's the same standard as a normal pop-up ad, or click-through ad, or anything like a banner ad. Once they agree to the same standard as that, then it'll be a new category. I think, James kept saying about control, I think they'll have some kind of IP over that. I don't know what it is.
All that sort of stuff, like the tracking pixel, that like the Facebook pixel, and all of that stuff, all exists out there already for advertising. And
not for moving in-game native programming ads.
No, I get that. So that's a whole new thing, and I totally get that. Could all, and quite possibly will, evolve into a massive industry. I get that, but as we sit here now, you know, it's had its meteoric rise, and like you say, it needs a breather. It probably will have a breather. I mean, that's fine, and it could come down. Calm down a bit, and then absolutely there's going to be news. But it's like, it could go up to 50, 60, 70p from here, but equally it might cool off, ultimately, but it might cool off quite a bit now because it's had a kind of crazy rise.
The one thing, how many times have I said this? Once the stock has got momentum, right, it takes a lot, and all we've got now is positive news. Hang on, they won't have any financial results out until September, right? All they have now is this. I guarantee now we'll be talking about this. In fact, well, Steve's not here, this is the company secretary. Pad, you're standing in, company secretary. Just make a note here. I guarantee in about 4 months' time we'll be a lot higher than we are now. And then maybe when we get towards... Listen, this is... EVRH and Vasarin, right? We're valid.
Am I putting this on the community tab?
In fact, do that. Put in the community. Yeah. EVRH...
Pad, you are taking the minutes for this, yeah?
Yeah.
Good. That's why he's been quite quiet. EVRH and VRS, right? They were valued at 200 million. They haven't got the potential that Bidstack has, right? And they haven't got the revenue. This company could easily be bought by Google for 500 million plus because they're in ads. Ads are very lucrative. And do you know what? Every titan, business titan in the world... Hang on, let me finish. In the world of gaming... will try and get every bit of edge they can to win in the streaming market. And any bit of enticement they can get, any bit of edge they can get, acquiring content or acquiring companies or businesses, they will do it. Bidstack, it's not about where we've been, it's about where it could be going. And this streaming, it's evolving, the gaming industry. It'll be massive. Like I did explain, if you watched the video, the difference between where gaming was and where it's going to be is huge. Because even when they had a free-to-play, it came to mobile, right? And these are relatively basic ads like Candy Crush. The user experience, the users exploded. Gamers went from being a teenager in their bedroom to my mother-in-law playing Candy Crush on her mobile or being addicted. She had a massive market. This will happen again in high-end quality games. And then, do you know what? Wherever there's a monetization possibility there, avenue, then it's going to be potential there and a huge. And Bidstack's in that. They're the only one doing that programmatically linked. You know,
but to say like, oh, Google buy this for 500 million. Well, yes, it could. But
it will happen.
Hold on.
This weekend it'll happen.
Hold on.
It'll happen by next weekend. Google will offer them a billion.
I can't believe people accuse you of ramping.
That was a joke.
Equally,
the weekend after.
Of course you can't. I'm going to get this point now. If it kills me, you can't underestimate Google and what the hell they're doing in the background and what their plans are and all the rest of it. Yes, they may go, oh, well, that's a really good thing. Well, but equally, they might have something going on that's very similar or whatever.
No, so, I've argued this with people. Do you know what? Listen.
I don't want to get into an argument about it. But all I'm saying is...
Just read. Hang on. Read Amazon, Jeff Bezos' book, right? And that's a typical, excellent example of where... Someone said this to me on Twitter, said, why didn't Google do that or AE Sports do that? I said, no, because Bidstack, first of all, are independent, right? So if you've got a gaming company come up with this tech, their rivals won't adopt it because it's like, hang on, they're getting insight into our tech, they can't, into our games. Secondly, when you're a specialist and you spend months or even a year with the regulators sorting this out and getting it a thing, then... And other companies like Google don't have that. They haven't specialised in this area. They've got other things going on, you know? Then it'd be easy for Google just to buy them rather than just try and form them and start from scratch.
Absolutely.
And this has happened with... A typical example with Amazon, you know? Barnes & Noble were in books. They had an online store because online was a thing. Barnes & Noble was the biggest bookstore in America by... Easily, you know, they had the market leader. Amazon came along and started selling books. And Amazon were nothing at the time. They were a tiny little thing. People were saying, people were almost laughing at Jeff Bezos. When it started growing, saying, you wouldn't last very long, will you? When Barnes & Noble start advertising, they can do exactly what you're doing. They're doing exactly what you're doing. And do you know what? Who knows of Barnes & Noble? Over here in the UK, no one knows of Barnes & Noble, pretty much. Everyone knows of Amazon. So do you know what? Because they specialise. You can't just switch that on.
Okay. Of course, and it can happen. But what I'm saying is that all I'm trying to do is, temper.
Yeah, I know.
The hype with a bit of reality and a bit of like, hold on, because the way I'm looking at it, you're going to go, well, I could play with 20% of my holding now.
Keep it clean, will you?
Yeah, and just, and do a bit of trading.
I could play with 20%. I'm playing with 20% of my holding right now.
But, okay, I know you love an analogy. I'll make an analogy. It's a bit like, thinking like your team's going to win the World Cup, like you're booking flights to the city that's going to host the final because you're absolutely convinced you're going to the final.
I'd say
whereas
that.
I think we might be able to get to the final, but I might cash out the quarterfinal stage because I don't know if we will get to the final.
No, okay, but no. Again, let me stretch that analogy out. That's like saying you think England will get to the final of the World Cup against me thinking Brazil will get the final. So
no. Yeah, okay, but Brazil haven't got to the last two finals, have they?
No, do you know what? They don't have to get the final. They have to get the quarterfinals, pretty much. That's all they have to get to. That's it.
Yeah, okay.
So it's like, what's the chance of Brazil getting to the quarterfinals? So
Justin, are they actually selling any adverts using their system?
Yeah, they are, yes. Oh, yeah,
are they making any money?
Hang on, but you read financial statements. So they started off in September, right? From scratch. They're nothing. From scratch in September, right? And then they had a target of 300,000. They beat that in the first month. There's 100 million, they reckon 100 million pounds worth of inventory on Football Manager alone.
You've said this lots of times, but that doesn't mean that you can actually sell 100 million pounds.
No, but they are selling it. I mean, the advertisers go on there. I mean, if you read the report, look at all the brands advertised. In fact, I had to put it in there. Big, proper brands like Audi and Nike and all their own advertising through Bidstack. Yeah.
Yeah. That means they get their name around the pitch, and that's pretty low grade advertising. That's not you're not going to sell much stuff off the back of that. That's something you'd do with some spare change after you've spent your money on TV and radio and all the rest of
it. Pad, no, it's not. It's not because do you know what? these are very targeted. First of all, it's targeted. Radio is not targeted at all, pretty much. And Peter's ineffective. You were getting gamers watch game. You got a secondary market as well. So now, what I'm saying is, the power of people said, well, just selling ads there. At the moment, right, if you're logged into a game, how many profiles are logged in, they can serve different ads for every profile. So
yes.
If you get the same situation in your secondary world, now on streaming, if people are watching playing on streaming, you're logged into Google, they can serve you ads just watching. So secondary market.
They can do that on Sky as well now.
Watch it on Twitch. Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. This small tech company in the UK is doing that. Native gaming, and nobody else is doing that. So
yeah, that's not new.
And when you've got two massive, listen, FM19, right, and Codemasters, they wouldn't have been picked up by Google Stadia if they weren't one of the best game publishers in the world. They're not going to just chuck crap on their platform, right? So these are basically people who adopted BidSack technology, right? Now, you know, BAFTA nominated companies that have adopted the technology, that in itself is validation. Then they go on Google, you know? They're in a very good position, a massive, you know, a huge advantage. There are people now realize, and they've got John Epstein, this guy that they brought on board on the advisory committee, who tried to do this several years ago. He did native in-game. The tech wasn't there, he said. At the time, it wasn't there. You couldn't do it. Now he's come on board. He realized it is there, and there's a massive opportunity. And this guy's a multimillionaire. He stands on stages and conferences. He's hired around the world to talk on tech and gaming and all this stuff. And look at the gravity of the people, the careers of the people who've come on BidStack. And do you know what?
Let me say one thing.
And a couple of them, I didn't realise this, James didn't approach them. A couple of them, be surprised. It was one of them, he said, literally, were so excited, he was calling me weekly. And this is quite a big name. I'm not sure who it is, but I mean, one of the guys on the advisory committee, he was calling me weekly, on a weekly basis, and he wanted to be on the board. But you just give an advisory position. So it's not like it's a pie in the sky, sort of, oh, we could do it. There are people in the know, not just us guys, we don't know. We're not gaming legends or gurus, or we haven't been in the industry for 20 years. These are people inside that know and realise this is a big thing. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, we can criticise it.
How big? Like, so he's completely right that this is a brand new area for advertising. He's completely right that there's a massive opportunity there.
Oh, it's going to be big! Big man! All you need to know is it's going to be big, yeah? When I say big, it's big.
Okay, but the September results at this stage of the business aren't necessarily going to be stellar, are they?
No. They've already said in their final results that they will hit the revenue target. James is quite confident they hit. So this year's going to be 5.6 million is the target, right? Now, okay. You think that's not a lot if you're valued 90 million. But hang on, that's a 2,000% growth. So in growth companies, you buy growth. So if they can do that within a year... It did say it's being back-end weighted. So this first half, they're obviously getting their tech still in there, but they're very confident of hitting it, because once you get in there, it's going to go nuts, the revenue.
Yeah.
So what you do in companies, you buy growth. You know, it may, when they start earning more money, oddly, ironically, a company's share price will slow down a bit, then it'll have to catch up. You know, the potential, you buy the growth at the moment, you don't know where it could end. Because that's why it's been hyped and hoped. It's in a very big area. They've got a very good team. They've got very good tech. So you don't know where it could... If you get growth like something like Trade Desk, which is, you know, one of the most fastest-growing programmatic ad platforms, then that's gone phenomenal. Like I said, 2 billion in a week, growth. It's went from 6 billion to 8 billion. That's because the growth is there. If you value that on traditional metrics, it's overvalued, Trade Desk. Nevertheless, do you know what? The share price has still risen. So you can stand back and say, and I've said this. You say, oh, it's been overvalued here. Listen, don't worry about that. If you want to earn money, multiples of what you put down, don't start, you know, questioning, what's the valuations? Look at the hope, hype, potential. And that's...
it's then understanding where that tops out, isn't it? Because I have made money, because we were buying at 6p, weren't we?
They've been paying time to realise it tops out. It won't top out yet. We're nowhere near news revenue. I mean, you know, if you look at something like VRS, right? People have said that. People are saying, well, the news keeps coming out, but the same kind of collaborations up. They haven't delivered any revenue at all. But it's went up to 160. It's come down to £1. It's gone back up. But it takes ages to top out. Honestly, you'd have plenty of time to exit or scale down when you've realised, hang on, maybe it's not delivering so much. Plenty of time. But do you know what? This year, this year, it'll still go nuts. I think we'll see this. Be closer towards £1 rather than 50 pence, I think.
Okay, my final comment on this is Brazil haven't been in a World Cup final since 2002.
Hang on, you came up with the crap analogy. Good night. You came up with the crap analogy.
You adopted it. So good night. Good night, everybody.
I ran with you because, you know, I felt I had to. Because, you know, I give you a chance. But, you know, what I'm saying is, if you put, say, you know, Bill Gates, you know, obviously I'm going to talk there. What I'm saying is, if you get all the best players, if you get some of the best players, right, or, I don't know what to say, or the best managers from around the world, right, to pick a team, right, or back something, what's the chance they could, you know, do a half-decent job? What I'm saying is, you get the right people. And I said this guy, you said this guy, a phenomenal entrepreneur. I don't know what, well, I'll finish on this bit, actually. But a phenomenal entrepreneur. I'll put a link to it, actually, on the community tab. He was a guy who's he's a VC fund in Silicon Valley. He's from India. He's done phenomenally well. He's outperformed most VCs. And he always says, do you know what? There's no secret here. All I do is back the people. And they'll always come up with the right they'll always find a path. You back the right people, they'll find a path. And and that's why there's people, you know, align themselves a bit to that. They wouldn't do so. They're very well-off people. They're multimillionaires. They wouldn't do so unless they're very confident it could work and win. Because you know what? All they have at the moment is reputation. They don't want to tarnish that reputation with something that doesn't work or spend time on something even. Time is, to them, is more valuable than anything. They don't spend time on a project that hasn't got a good chance of doing very well, you know?
Yeah.
They want something to add to their CV. Yeah, we that star that came from nothing, sold for $1 billion exit. We were behind that as well. That's what they want to do. And do you know what? They've got the knowledge. They've got more knowledge than we have. They're in ad tech. They're multimillionaires in the world of tech, ad tech, gaming tech, and all that. Yep. They know a bit more about it than us. And they've decided it's a goer, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And we can see that it's a goer. But it's just how much of a goer? Anyway,
exactly. There we are.
But this really reminds me of EVRH, where I think all of us can spot that that's not going to work.
It's not. I know someone's asked me on my community tab, actually. No, under a comment of one of my videos today, said, what do you think of the new deal? They did a deal with now Broadway. Is that a deal with the Broadway family?
Keep on doing deals. One's going to buy this.
Yeah. It's not about that. It's about, and do you know what? It's at the end market. And like I said, BidStack right now, their first year of revenue pretty much was for EVRH. They did 1.2 million, right? They've been listed for 3 years. Yeah. Now, BidStack are going to do 4 times that or 3 times that in the first year.
So I'm more than happy to park my reservations about their long-term business plan and how much money they can actually make out of this. And
exactly.
I still think that they'll fit better as part of a bigger organisation. But both of those things can be completely ignored and just let everyone else get overexcited about it and keep on snapping it up. That's fine for me.
That's the hype.
I personally, I'm spotting some reservations.
But hang on, guys. You guys had reservations at, say, sixpence, where I kept saying, boys, it's going to be big, it's going to be big. And now we are at 30.
Now we are
at 35 pence. You're still saying, oh, I don't know. This is your best performing stock pretty much of this year.
That's exactly what I'm just saying. I'm going to have my reservations. I'm going to keep them. Yeah, but thanks. I don't mind everyone else getting overexcited about it. That's fine.
Yeah, well, that's part of the hype, you see. People see the potential because they have their hope there. That equals momentum. Once you've got that, and you know, you've got to have those elements there, and it's all there. You know, on top of that.
Yeah, and I would make the differentiation from other companies, perhaps like EVRH, where I can see this as a workable business model that can generate several billions of pounds worth of revenue. I totally understand that. But like Paddy, so there are reservations that you can actually value at a 100, 200, 300 million pound company, but we'll see.
It'll be more than that.
Yeah, of course.
Do you know what's hard to see? It's hard to see the future, isn't it? And there's no industry where you have businesses of that size competing for the streaming market. No industry like that. There's no industry like that in the world. The industry is massive, and already Google have come out trying to usurp everyone else, trying to steal a march on Microsoft, on Sony, on Nintendo, on all these guys, on Apple, on Amazon, by doing their streaming service at first and saying, this is the content, this is our best content. It's like, you know, it's like realizing, no one realized Netflix was going to be a winner. And it has, and everyone's like, God, that's the way forward. Netflix is streaming. But now you have to compete on, you know, on content. But you've got a massive of five or six big players trying to win this market. That's why where there's hype and hope potential there. And it's only just starting to warm up. There's going to be a frenzied battle over streaming because they understand, they see the future. Streaming's where it's at. And I saw that Google Stadia announcement. I thought, it so makes sense. Having consoles and DVDs is so last year or last 5 years. Just picking up a controller and playing it on any screen you want to is the future, and the install base will be massive, because literally it's as easy as switching on your telly, you know? You don't have to have these downloads and all that nonsense.
Yeah. And the other thing I was going to say was, I don't see really any merit or point in actually comparing it, or comparing any stock to any other stock group. Like, people have sort of said about ASOS or things like that. I've seen a bit on Twitter about
Did you do that?
That was Justin.
I don't see the point of doing that. No, I do. Listen, final point. this is the final point. Because there are people now getting very bitter. They miss up the move on Bidstack, and they're criticising it, having a go at the valuation, and trying anything to, you know, find a chink in the armour there. And they're really having a go at it. And listen, there's no point just publicly slagging it off, because you want to earn money in stocks and shares. You'd be better, right? Yeah. Just looking at why this has moved, what's happened, and trying to look for and learning from that, and trying to find the next one. Because it does happen. Because that's why, essentially, managed to get VRS, why I managed to get, you know, EVRH, and now why I'm in Bidstack. Because I've learned from what moves the market, and this is it. And do you know what? Of those three, this is the best. This has got an end market that could be very valuable. And that's what I'm saying. Just learn from it. You know, rather than people just publicly slagging off because you've missed the move, don't. Learn from it. And so
I get that as a point of it, but it's actually kind of technically comparing it or trying to say because of that. I don't know. It's you've got to judge it on its own merits and kind of go, does it have that potential to deliver what it's saying to deliver? And if it has, then it will skyrocket.
One question to the haters and the trolls out there a bit, Zach. Would you be saying the same things if you held the stock?
Exactly. Yeah. No.
No, it's jealousy, and it's a sad thing is they won't learn from that. Being bitter. You don't learn from being bitter. Just learn from it.
I didn't get into EVRH. I never slagged it. I said, well done to everyone who got in, and Steve got in and sold at 2p or whatever.
So Steve got in 1 pence, sold 1.5 pence, 50%. Yes! And then it went on to 18 pence.
It
went
to
18 pence. So it was amazing. So,
but, and I don't think we were horrible to him. We were, at least you made some profit.
Well, that's been nasty now then. That's it. Thank you very much for the weekend podcast. Thanks, Pad. We'll have to, are you getting back to working now on the house, are you?
Yeah, I've got to cut some joists, build some things.
Cut some joists. Right. I can't do that stuff. I'll be I'll just be on my keynote, preparing for my next video. Have you subscribed? Have you touched my bell?
I'm going to do that today.
I don't know. I'll get emails from you.
I seem to get a lot, and I check out your community tab quite a lot.
Okay, send us a text every time you put something on there, so.
Because I want the people who are subscribed and have touched my tap my bell and on the community tab, those are the people who will get the first dibs up on. So I just want to share with you guys, don't miss out on the information I'm giving you. It's valuable information, you know. It's information on which to base your decisions. It's not investment advice. It's just information. It's opinion based. Some of it's factual from RNSs. But there we are. So I just want you to be, you know, one of the first guys to receive the stuff from my community tab. Right.
I've never heard anyone talk about this community tab apart from you. Are you sure it's a thing?
Yeah, no. I don't know. Some YouTubers who earn good money on YouTube. In fact, some of the biggest earners on YouTube are the people who tell you how to earn money on YouTube. It's like, so how do you get started in that? If you've got one subscriber, you can start telling other people how to earn money on YouTube. You can't, people won't believe you. But all these people who tell you how to earn money, they've got a lot of subscribers, so it must be true. But there we are. But no, it's basically, you know, getting interact. But I quite like it. It's fine. Hey, just subscribe, I'll do a video this weekend. Wednesdays and Sundays, I do videos, and I'll be looking at charts of stocks that are very hot, got momentum, I think, but are coming back almost close to the buy zone at the moment. But I wouldn't buy them yet. I wouldn't buy them up here. But they're coming back into the buy zone. The companies I've done research on, I like, and I want to buy more of. They made an initial move, and I'd be annoyed, really. I haven't enough stock in it. I want to buy more. So I will be buying more.
I'm the same.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Okay, guys, thanks. Have a nice weekend. I'll speak next weeky.
Yeah. Cheers. Bye.
Say bye, Pat.
Paddy, say bye. He's new to this.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.